Black heart, gold pants, 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 black podcast.
Greetings and welcome to episode 3 of Blackheart Gold Podcast. I am Hawkeye State, joined as always by Oops Pal Surprise. Oops, good evening.
How are we doing?
Good, good to hear you. And tonight, our special guest is Mike Loss of the Cedar Rapids Gazette and The Hog, which is the gold standard in Iowa blogging. Whoa. Mike, how you doing tonight?
I didn't know that, but thanks. Surprise. I'm just groping my way along through cyberspace like everybody else. Feel like I've started something brand new, and, you know, just like you guys, it's, you start somewhere and you just hope they're going somewhere, I guess.
That's been our experience since day one, and you're doing
fantastic.
Thanks
a lot.
Sure. Our initial plan was to discuss things like Wisconsin getting rid of beer advertisements and Michigan's current problems, but after the Pocky bomb got dropped on everybody today, I figured we would start with the end of the season for Jewel Hampton and where Iowa goes
sure.
from here. We're recording this Tuesday night. Today was the day of reckoning of sorts for the Iowa backfield. Hampton is out for the season. Brinson is going to miss at least the first week, if not more. And yes, Pocky O'Meara is the starting halfback. That shudder right there is about my reaction as well. But, Mike, what do you think of or how this is going to affect Iowa in this upcoming year?
Well, as Ed Begley Jr. said in the movie Pittsburgh, NG, not good. And that's really an obscure reference, and I apologize for it immediately, but I love that movie, so never mind. I won't do it again. We don't know how this is going to play out, but we know that this Brandon Wager, I never know I'm saying his last name right, from Sioux City, might have to step up pretty fast. I mean, O'Meara, I think we'd all agree, is a role player. You know, and Ferentz touted him quite a bit today, as you can imagine he would, and I'm not knocking him. I mean, I think what he's done in his life to this point has been commendable and remarkable. But is he a Big Ten starting halfback? I don't know. At the same time, weirder things have happened down there in that program. But for you're thinking it's got to be Brinson if it's not Hampton, and now, you know, we find out Brinson's not right. Well, the real question is who's number two, and right now it's Adam Robinson, a redshirt freshman from Des Moines. And I tell you what, I saw him play in April in what amounted to Iowa spring game. I thought he was really good. Just tough, and somebody who once he got the ball just smashed through the line, and I realized it was a spring game against what wasn't even Iowa's complete number one defense, but I thought, okay, there's somebody I didn't know who's a player. And then when fall opened up and we heard about this guy and that guy, and I never heard Robinson's name mentioned, and I thought, well, maybe I was just seeing things. But I'll be curious to see if Robinson gets 8 or 10 carries Saturday, what he does. And how's Wager play into this? You know, it's not going to be a red shirt. And it can't be now. So kid, your number's going to get called probably sooner rather than later in the first game of the year. And let's see what you got.
Yeah, I'm completely with you on Robinson. I didn't see the close scrimmage, but I did go down for the kids' day scrimmage in August, and I came away thinking he was the number one back. He looked quick through the hole, had a little bit of elusiveness, and I agree with you on O'Meara. He's you know capable, I guess, for Northern Iowa and maybe for Iowa State, but when we get into Big Ten play, I just can't see him being a long term solution. He just doesn't hit you know have the I guess the athleticism to do it.
Yeah. Well, this is the Ferentz way. I mean, the upperclassmen inherit these starting jobs, and the underclassmen aren't given a whole bunch of pomp and circumstance and smoke and whatever. They have to, quote unquote, earn their way into starting jobs and into playing time positions. So because O'Meara's number one on the depth chart and he'll be on the field when the game starts Saturday, doesn't mean that the Iowa coaches are saying this is our best back. They're saying this is the order of things here, and everybody behind him has got to prove themselves. You know, and that's not at all unusual in college coaching, but we don't know anything about running back position at Iowa right now is a short way of saying it. We don't know anything about it. And it's too bad. I mean, Jewel Hampton was a real pleasure to watch last year, and it was like, oh, this is going to be somebody. I mean, as great as Sean Green is, I really didn't think Iowa was going to miss a beat. I know that might sound crazy, but given the kind of game they play, the offense, the so-called system, I thought that you could just stick Hampton right in there and keep on going. Now, you know, who knows?
Yeah. Well, it seems like it's not going to be a repeat of 2004, where there's absolutely nobody in the backfield, and you're just plugging in whatever warm body and praying that they don't fumble, the five times a game that you give it to them. But at the same time, it seems like, and obviously correct me if I'm wrong, but as long as it's either O'Meara or Brinson, O'Meara or Robinson at tailback, don't you kind of have to think that right now you're taking the Penn State game off the board as a winnable game?
Well, I wouldn't look that far ahead because it's a fourth game. We're going to be saying things Saturday night that we probably couldn't picture right now. That's always the case, for better or worse. Somebody's going to show something that we didn't know they had, or a weakness is going to show up that we might not have been aware was present. As far as the Penn State game off the board, I'm telling you, I really haven't put that on the board. Or, I mean, I shouldn't say it like that. I thought that was a 10 to 15% game before this thing about Hampton, because I just think everything's going to be stacked against the Hawkeyes. I mean, it's going to be, they're going to be bloodthirsty out there. They really are. They've got three soft games before Iowa, all at home. They've got the sting of last November. They've got a very good team. I don't think they're getting enough credit for what they've got. And a lot of people around here seem to be slow to give them credit for what they've got for various reasons.
Well,
and, I mean, not only they have all the motivation in the world, they'll have 100,000 fans who for 12 hours have been awake and putting on their white. And, you know, there's just not much about it that says Iowa is going to conquer all of that. I mean, it would take a supreme effort from a top five team to go in there and win that night. So, but this sure isn't going to help.
Sure. Is it a possibility, you think, Mike, that Adam just said, you know, it's not 2004 just yet, and I agree, but the one thing O'Meara...
They haven't played a game yet either. Nobody, you know... Sure. You can't lose everybody to injury in fall practice.
Right. When I was thinking about it today, though, my thought was the one thing O'Meara brings to the table that nobody else seems to have just yet is that his pass protection is apparently the best on the team. Probably was the best on the team last year. I mean, the only time that O'Meara really saw the field on offense was on third down when it was an obvious pass situation and they needed him to stay in and protect. Is it a possibility that they throw out the playbook, go to the 0-4 Drew Tate, chuck it everywhere offense, and use O'Meara basically as a blocking back the whole way?
I don't think they'll do that against Northern Iowa. I think they want to give their running backs who are healthy every chance to show what they can do. And I also don't think that they want to give away too much of future playbooks in a game that they should score anywhere from 31 to 45 points without shocking anybody. No knock on Northern Iowa, but, you know, it's a 1AA defense and a very young pass defense. So I wouldn't expect that now in games. I mean, it only is going to get harder. Everybody knows it. Iowa State, Arizona, and then the Big Ten. So, you know, if a running game hasn't established itself by then, yeah, you have to. You've got to change up. But I think that's really premature right now. And I also, I mean, there are things O'Meara does well, or he wouldn't have been as high on the depth chart as he was. A former walk-on wouldn't just play his way up into second or third team last year if he wasn't a smart player who did bring some things to the table on the field in certain circumstances. So the cupboard's not there, and you know, we have to, again, I have to say this, but we have to see what Robinson and Wager can do before we really have any idea what this team's going to look like.
The progression, I think, is, I'm with you. I think probably we're going to end up seeing a lot of Wager and a lot of Robinson. If Brinson ever can get healthy long enough, we'll probably see a bunch of him as well, but it'll probably be a few weeks before we see anything like that.
Yeah. You know, if I can go off on a little tangent, this certainly isn't limited to Iowa. There are teams all over the country that have lost players for the season in their preseason camps. Illinois lost a starting cornerback. Ohio State lost a linebacker, although they lost him because of an incident in a bar where he got conked on the head. Oklahoma State's lost players. Texas has lost three tight ends for the season. So this is why recruiting kind of matters, because right. If you are a successful program, you do have quality players behind the guy who goes down. It's what should separate Iowa from an Indiana or now a Purdue. But at running back, we'll see if it does.
Sure. I mean, if you had told us last year that the whole state would be hanging on Jewel Hampton's knee, I think we'd probably feel pretty good about what he did last year. I mean, considering he was a true freshman.
Yeah, and last year, before the first game, running back was a question.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Nobody knew that Sean Green was capable of anything remotely possible of what he did, and then we had no idea what was behind him.
Let's get to lighter topics.
Please.
We'll have plenty of time to break down the running back progression here as it may be. You posted this week about the Michigan issue. I'd say that's a lighter topic, but considering what we're talking about, it is. You've been around the program, you know, significantly more than we have, considering we have no access to anything.
It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, exactly. We'll be co-opted before you know it. do you have any sense of how tight Ferentz and the staff are with the timing rules as far as the voluntary workouts and the things that are being discussed with Michigan right now?
Well, I asked Ferentz today about those rules and how hard are they to live within, or to live with, I should say, and, you know, if those rules cause problems. And I asked Gary Barta the same thing later, and they said, no, it's not a problem. If Ferentz said in his perfect world, they'd come in and look at film on Sunday, and then he'd let them go, and then they'd come back Monday night to get back to some football. But you can't do that because players have to have one complete day off during the week. And so they've decided that they would go through the tapes while they're still fresh in everybody's mind and then work them out on Sunday, and then they give them Monday off. He says they can live with that. The rest of it, he said, you just manage your time, and those are the rules. And Gary Barta was even more adamant about it. He said that there are rules and we abide by them. And yeah, everybody supposedly has compliance monitors. Everybody in Division I football has compliance monitors, and other sports too. I don't have any idea how those really work. But what my point is if you have one disgruntled player on your team, and every program's got few. I don't care how good the program is, how good of people the coaches are. Only 11 players can play on each side of the ball at a time. And there are some players who have unsatisfactory careers. So there's always going to be a few players at every program who leave the program, I wouldn't say disgruntled necessarily, but unsatisfied. Some would be disgruntled. All you have to do to get one of them to blow a whistle on you is cheat. Otherwise, nobody's going to listen to them. You know what I mean?
Sure.
So when I hear this, and Gary Barta agreed with it when I asked him about it, but when I hear people say everybody does it, well, no, they don't. It's too risky. It's crazy. Now, do players spend more than 20 hours a week at their craft? Absolutely. Are they encouraged to? Absolutely. But are there more than 20 hours of organized team functions, practices, and meetings within most college football programs? No, because the risk is way too great. I mean, it's an NCAA rule. And there are, counting walk-ons, over 100 players on a team, and it only takes one or two, and in Michigan's case it sounds like about 10,
right,
to call you out on it.
Mm-hmm.
So, no, it's not common, and the things that Rodriguez is being accused of are very serious charges. If the players are right, he didn't just bend rules, he stomped up and down on them. And if the independent investigator finds that what the players have said is true, he's done.
Yeah. Or at the very least, Mike Barwis is done. But you would hope Rodriguez as well. You mentioned earlier the compliance officers, and some people in Michigan in their response have mentioned the same thing. And that's what seems the craziest about this, is that it seems incredibly risky. These are charges of very specific misbehavior, like taking attendance, coaches doing that, and not actively supervising, but being there. And it just seems like no coach in their right mind would even think of doing that. And that's on one hand, you want to say, well, yeah, then he's got to go. But at the same time, it doesn't even pass the smell test. It's that callous a disregard for the rules. And so I'm not really even sure how to interpret this.
Well, the first thing that I've got to keep reminding people is that these are accusations. This is nothing of the sort's been proven, at least not yet. But there are a lot of Michigan fans who are furious that this has ever even come to light. They're accusing the Detroit Free Press of a witch hunt. But, again, it's not one or two players now. We're talking about several, and at least one has gone on the record. I mean, he's attached his name to it. And we're seeing consistent responses to questions posed to them by these Free Press reporters, which, you know, where there's smoke, there's fire. But right now it's all simply claims and allegations and so forth. But it's also... it's easier for some of us to believe when you saw the slithery way that Rodriguez left West Virginia, and that cost Michigan financially. And then today there's something that came out, this is Tuesday, that Rodriguez is part of a cabal of condominium developers in the state of Virginia who are being sued for $4 million. I may not be getting this exactly right, and I apologize if I'm not, but I think it's something to do with failure to repay a loan or something like that. That information is easily found in the news.
Mm-hmm.
And it starts to make you think there's a pattern. And again, I sort of want to just put a lid on it right there, as at least what's coming out of my mouth, but you wouldn't be very inclined to believe this if it involved one of dozens of other major college coaches around the country. But with this, I think you're a little more inclined to say they should take a look.
Yeah.
Well, Matt Hinton at Dr. Saturday, when talking about this over the weekend, had said that the fact that Lloyd Carr was at Michigan before, and that there were players who played under Lloyd and then played under Rodriguez, and if Lloyd didn't bend the rules at all and Rodriguez bended them or worse, that they'd be in a rare position to understand that. But given the fact that Rodriguez, I mean, really, as a head coach, has been in kind of, I don't want to say lower level, but you know, West Virginia, for one thing, where the players are the two-star, three-star guys who just want to play and will look the other way themselves in order to get a little bit of time on the field. And he makes the move to Michigan, where these guys, you know, have been, you know, in the Lloyd Carr system, where everything is played by the book. And if he does, you know, bend the rules one way or the other, are not going to be nearly as open to looking the other way. I think there's a little bit of smoke there, and you know, you throw all the other stuff on top of it, and yeah, witch hunter, no, by the Detroit Free Press. I think there's got to be something to this. There's just too many claims and too many both former and current players, saying that this is legitimate for it to be nothing more than a fabrication by the writers in Detroit.
Mm-hmm. Well, to clarify what I was talking about, Rodriguez and four partners owe $3.9 million from a defaulted loan that was intended for a planned condominium project in Blacksburg, Virginia, where Virginia Tech's located. That's according to a federal lawsuit, which a bank filed against Rodriguez 2.5 weeks ago. The thing with Michigan and Lloyd Carr is interesting, you know. A lot of Michigan people were tired of Lloyd Carr. And have we seen a story like this before? Iowa people?
Yeah, no kidding.
Where a coach who, a good person who overall did a pretty good job, and Lloyd Carr did more than a pretty good job, by the way, if you look at his record. But is the game passing him by? Do we need somebody in here to take us to the next level? And sometimes that next level is, we know what that next level is.
Smooth-talking replacement. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously talking about the Tom Davis thing from, you know, what's becoming ancient history, but it's still a cautionary tale.
Oh, sure. I think yeah. Iowa basketball is still recovering from what had to be the single most boneheaded move in the history of the program.
Yeah, you hope it's recovering.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think it is, but I agree with you.
Now, the lightest of all sides of this, the Wisconsin hyper-ironic beer prohibition. Apparently, Wisconsin has decided now that they're no longer going to allow advertisements for beer companies at their football games.
Mm-hmm. On radio broadcast, yes.
Can you think of a situation where another program could disallow advertising for something that is more fundamental to its actual existence?
I don't know. I mean, maybe I'd say something about Cal or Stanford, but I'm not going to go there. But
is it the equivalent of Iowa banning like Pioneer hybrid ads in the middle of the game?
Well, it's funny to me. You know, you go ahead and ban advertising, and that's a nice politically correct move to make. Okay, you're not going to have beer ads on your radio broadcast. That's fine, and I think I understand the rationale behind it. But would they ever dream of, say, banning drinking within a quarter mile radius of the stadium on game day? I mean, bars notwithstanding, but parkades located near the stadium, university-owned arcades, that sort of thing. No, they wouldn't dream of it. And the reason why is, if you take away drinking and tailgating from major college football, you are going to lose a fairly significant slice of audience. I mean, let's say Kinnick Stadium instead of Camp Randall. What if you said, we're still having football here, folks. Come on down, enjoy the game, but you cannot, under any circumstances, have alcohol in university parking lots. You think that attendance wouldn't plummet?
Yeah, just like
it that. Absolutely would.
Well, just look at Minnesota.
I think,
you know, they moved from a facility where, I mean, there's not a whole lot of tailgating around the Metrodome, but, you know, where they actually allowed beer to everybody inside and moved to a brand new state-of-the-art stadium and put an alcohol ban in place, and now they can't sell luxury boxes. Their ticket sales are down. It's you're right. It's a fundamental part of the entire game day experience, rightfully or wrongfully. But to make that drastic of a jump would put a serious hindrance on just about anybody.
Yeah, and also, who's listening to these broadcasts? They're not students,
right?
You know, do Iowa students go back to their dorm rooms or apartments and listen to Iowa football on the radio? No. Those games are listened to by adults, and generally older adults. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
They're usually listened to by the 400-pound guy in the seat next to me at Kinnick.
With the headset.
With the headset on. Yeah, he's always right under there. He's always, every time that there's a play, and my dad will ask, who's that? He's on it. He's got Dolphin right there.
Well,
and that's
he's a big fan.
Yes, exactly.
He's committed. And what also kind of bugs me about that is that No, but it seems like nobody's ever, like, listening to the radio, and then, like, a beer ad comes on, and they're like, hey, that's a good idea. I hadn't even thought of that. And then they just get wasted. Like, there's not nearly enough causation there. It's just a beer ad, and people, like, filter those out of their head immediately. I don't get what, if anything, they're trying to accomplish.
What it is. It's political correctness, and that's what it is. And I'm not on the anti-PC force or anything like that. But sometimes that's all things are. And when that's all things are, they're worthless. And to me, this is a pretty hollow gesture. The press park's in a parking ramp, not terribly far from the stadium. And every 2 years when we go up there, we get out of the car, and there are people of all ages in that parking ramp with card tables set up. And here's the beer, and here are the Bloody Marys, and, you know, the gin and tonics, and whatever. And it's a piece of university property. So until they start banning booze on site, anything else they do to me is a real hollow gesture.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'd agree.
But you know what? There are people who will argue strenuously, though, that anything that has to do with the state university should not have a company that sells alcoholic products as one of its sponsors. And I think a strong case can be made for that. The thing is, if you're going to draw the line there, why only there?
Mm-hmm. Right. As soon as Wisconsin bans cheese curds on top of it, then we got something to talk
about. Oh, yeah, don't even say that.
Well, after this discussion of tailgating, I want to remind all of our listeners that the Blackheart Gold Pants tailgate is October 10th against Michigan.
That's a night game, right?
Oh, that's a night game. Yeah.
Oh, yes.
There will be...
We will be well lubricated.
There will definitely be alcohol on university property that night. And with that, Mike...
I shouldn't be laughing at that.
Oh, it's okay. We'll all laugh at that.
Yes, well, I'm going to anyway.
Yes, and laugh and laugh. Well, Mike, I think we've taken more than enough of your time tonight. We want to thank you for joining us to discuss Hampton and a variety of other things, and remind our listeners that they can catch you on the Cedar Rapids Gazette or at the blog daily.
GazetteOnline.com. And I will say, and I'm not just saying this to return the favor, but I enjoy your site very much.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you.
And with that, episode 3 is in the books. I want to thank Mike Loss for joining us. As we said before, you can catch Mike every day at the Cedar Rapids Gazette and at the blog at GazetteOnline.com. Next week, we'll be recapping Northern Iowa and discussing Hate Week 1 with former Clone Chronicles author Crossside. Forward to that. We're available on iTunes now, so be sure to subscribe to the podcast. Look forward to talking to you next week.